It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of the Ben Domin Edge podcast brought to you by Fox News. You can check out all of our podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. I hope that you will rate, review, and subscribe to this one and share it with a friend if you find it of interest. Today, we had something pretty incredible happen in the politics of the UK, where we saw the resignation of Liz Truss, who becomes the shortest prime minister in terms of her period of time in office that Britain has ever seen. It was an incredible series of events that led to her elevation and then very short tenure and departure. And it has to do a lot with the different proposals that she put forward as it regards the economy, taxation, and the like, policies that ultimately she backed off of, showing perhaps her weakness in a very early way and an inability to communicate around policies that had conservatives very worried. Now we have a potential return of Boris Johnson, potentially a new face in some of the other potential candidates for PM. And for all of this, we have Kara Kennedy, a staff writer at The Spectator, who guides us through what's going on when it comes to this incredible political event. Kara Kennedy, coming up next.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Kara Kennedy, thank you so much for taking the time to join me again. Obviously, this is a very interesting moment when it comes to the political scene in the UK. What happened to Liz Truss?
Yes, Ben. In just over 1 week, we're about to see our fifth Conservative Prime Minister in just 6 years. It's a really catastrophic time of British politics right now, especially when you consider that yesterday in the House of Commons at Prime Minister's Questions, we saw Liz Truss say, "I'm a fighter, not a quitter." Less than 24 hours later, that's aged as badly as anything can, because she formally resigned as Prime Minister earlier today. The timeline is kind of weird. I'm not going to say that nobody saw this coming, but nobody saw this coming so quickly. But I think yesterday really, really was the kind of straw that broke the camel's back. And throughout the day, we saw stuff kind of get worse and worse.
You know, one of the things that I think Americans really don't have in terms of their perspective on this is because they barely got the chance to even know who Liz Truss was, they may not understand the different factors that led to her, you know, having the shortest period of any prime minister. So tell me, if you can, what some of those major factors were.
Well, I'll go through a kind of quick timeline, but it all kind of kicked off because of the budget. So originally when Liz Truss came to office, she gave Kwasi Kwarteng the job of Chancellor. That's kind of where the rot started, when he released plans for the mini budget. They were very growth heavy. They wanted to jumpstart the British economy. But since then, they have admitted that they went too hard, kind of too fast. So the mini budget that was released, God, it feels like years ago now, but released a few weeks ago, included $45 billion in unfunded tax cuts over 5 years. It was dubbed Trussonomics in the UK, and it was a total disaster in terms of markets. Global markets responded by literally selling off British-backed assets. The pound fell to its lowest ever level against the US dollar. Kwarteng was fired just 3 weeks later, with Jeremy Hunt appointed in his place. Since then, basically every announcement has been U-turned on, apart from a few. But if Liz Truss did have any kind of supporters after that budget was announced, she lost them when she U-turned. I think that was a big issue. It was, if you're going to be big and brave, then that's fine, but you have to stick by it. It kind of calmed down then, and then yesterday was a big thing. So I'll do like a little timeline.
Sure.
So in the morning, she did PMQs. Well, midday she did PMQs. Like I said, she said she was a fighter, not a quitter. Soon after that, Home Secretary Suella Braverman was fired and published a really brutal resignation letter after being forced to step down as Home Secretary. On a technicality, the official line from Downing Street is that she was sacked for sending documents from her personal phone, but nobody really bought that. There was rumours flying around about disagreements with immigration policy, particularly student visas. Then in the evening, things got worse. The Commons was in total mayhem. MPs alleged that ministers were actually physically pulled into voting lobbies. There was a vote on fracking. The Tories did win by 326 votes, but it was tarnished by the claims of intimidation and bullying. Then, if it could get worse, it did. This was topped off by a Conservative MP, Charles Walker, who told the BBC Live in a really, really visceral statement that the day was a pitiful reflection of the Conservative Party, and added that there was no coming back from it. And he said, he added that he had been of that view for about 2 weeks. As that was happening, more and more Tory MPs were putting in letters of no confidence. So that happens when members of the party essentially lose faith in their leader. And you need 54 Tory MPs to submit letters before what's called a vote of no confidence will be held. We don't really know 100% how many letters went in. I think it was about half that. I think it was like 25-ish. Mm. But Sir Graham Brady, who is the head of the 1922 committee, which oversees the vote of no confidence, was seen going into number 10 this morning. That's what really showed signs that this was the end. Basically, essentially, when Graham Brady goes to see you unannounced, it's like the Grim Reaper coming to see you. You know, you're kind of gone.
You know, that's a great timeline and helpful. You know, I'm interested in the Braverman letter part of this. They had, as you said, sort of this hand waving explanation for why she was gotten rid of. What's your own perspective on what was going on there, and was that kind of in terms of an indication of the decay of support for Truss? Do you think that was kind of a critical moment?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, Quasi being sacked was a big thing. As Chancellor, basically, as a Prime Minister without your Chancellor, you're kind of a bit screwed. And then Home Secretary, a really important person, being sacked, or, well, there were kind of issues in the beginning when Suella went. First, the line was that she had stepped down. Then Downing Street did come out and say that she was fired for this kind of technicality. I mean, the British people aren't stupid. They know that there was more to this story. And I think the student visa line is probably true. I mean, Suella takes a hard stance on immigration. Liz Truss believes in growth. So she thinks that by bringing more and more people into the UK, then you can kind of kickstart the economy. Apparently, there was about an hour and a half screaming match between the two. So, yeah, I would go with the line that Downing Street kind of tried to cover that up a bit with the official line. But, yeah, I think immigration was at the heart of their fallout.
So in terms of, I want to get to, sort of what happens next. But before we move off of it, as you think about these economic proposals and the impact that they had, the general frame that's being adopted by some American commentators is that this is a warning against old approaches, Reagan-Thatcher approaches to economic policy, that essentially these were perhaps growth-focused policies, but they were out of step with what people wanted, whether you're using the explanation of this as kind of a supply-side approach, in America, you know, it would be most identified with Paul Ryan's tax policy, which he advocated for and successfully passed under President Trump. There's this been this running critique that like these are policies from the 1980s that haven't been updated for the challenges of the current economy. Do you think that that was what was going on there? Or was this a situation where Truss, just by dint of perhaps not having that ability to fight or the urgency to fight, the willingness to take the slings and arrows on behalf of this policy, you know, was this more a failure of policy or more a failure of the person for the moment not standing up for what they were advocating for and what their own team had come up with?
I think it's the latter. Certainly, I think that Liz Truss's biggest failure is her failure to communicate. I don't think that the economic budget was a terrible thing. Kwasi is extremely intelligent. I mean, he worked in the city for years. And Liz Truss said from the beginning, we need to be brave and we need to be bold, because otherwise the Conservative Party in the business of managing decline, and that's nobody wants that. The issue is that she failed to communicate with the British public what had to happen. I mean, if she would have stood there and said, look, guys, we really have no choice. We need to be brave. We need to make decisions now. We need growth. We need, as a Conservative Party, fundamentally, you want to cut taxes, right? You want to grow an economy, a sound pound. And I think that she was able to do that in terms of in the budget with her ideas. But I think the failure was to let the British people know what she was going to do and what would have been a result of that. I mean, the markets being such a disaster after that, was some of it was down to the fact that she didn't communicate to anybody what she was doing. And then you get the total U-turn after that when Kwasi was fired. She said she made no apology for the fact that this was her economic policy. She kind of tried to throw the blame on him. They did it together, and I think that was the issue. It was the lack of communication and then the lack of admitting that this was her policy and that these were her ideas, and instead she kind of threw him under the bus.
Speaking of lack of communication, you have her come out and give this speech, which is shocking in its brevity in terms of her leaving the scene. It was basically just coming out and saying, I can't do this job. I have, you know, I don't have the confidence to do this job. I'm leaving now. And it just had this bizarre quality to it. You know, is that kind of a demonstration of this is just a situation where she was not up to a shift from someone who basically got his job by dint of his communication skills in Boris to someone who got the job in spite of them? Was just too much of a screeching halt for the way that people were used to the approach used by their top leadership.
Well, I think her resignation speech was the only thing quicker than an actual tenure as prime minister. I mean, and this is why now the calls for Boris Johnson kind of make sense. Like I said, Liz's biggest failure was her failure to communicate. She can't speak. She's not a very good public speaker at all. And Boris seems the most attractive person for that right now. I mean, he can make you laugh and he can at least communicate what he's trying to say. He might not do it, but he'll say it. The one thing I will say about Liz Truss's speech is she did kind of admit that she didn't have the mandate, which I think was good. I think there was a big lack of self-awareness for the other parts of her speech, but at least she said, I don't have the mandate to do this. So I kind of respect her for that, at least.
Mm-hmm. The folks who came in behind Liz Truss include Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt. Do you expect both of them to try to make a go of it again?
I think Penny has already announced that she will. I saw on her Twitter earlier, she put up one of the kind of PR pictures, vote for PM for PM. So I think she's already in the leadership. I mean, the bookies now are saying that Rishi Sunak will be the favourite. I don't really know about that, because what the Tories are desperately trying to scramble for now is the person that can get some kind of hold on the party and some kind of unity candidate. I think Rishi Sunak is probably one of the most divisive candidates in the party right now. Penny is... Liz Truss made a big mistake by sending Penny into one of the sessions of PMQs, because what that showed, was how good of a public speaker Penny is and how well she can hold herself in the face of Keir Starmer and the opposition. So that was probably a mistake on Truss's side, because Penny is really, really good at public speaking. Also, there's been claims that Boris is going to stand. And I spoke to a few Tory MPs earlier who said that on the party's behalf, this would be the best choice, because it, by bringing Boris back, it kind of looks better than having three individual prime ministers in a year. And they can kind of say, oh, we made a mistake and we've undone it. There's also people saying that Boris has served his time and paid the price. And he is kind of the only one that's won a general election and has a personal mandate and will be able to prevent calls for a general election, which is the biggest thing that they face right now.
Yeah, it does seem like that rationale that sort of Boris represents a reset. He's the most recent person to actually have a mandate, and it's basically a do-over. There is some political case to be made for that argument. And, you know, I think that even, you know, as soon as he departed, there were people, myself included, saying that, you know, he didn't sound like someone who, you know, had no intentions of coming back. That being said, you know, he's on the speaking circuit and he's in the Caribbean, or at least he was in the Caribbean yesterday.
I think he's come back. I've heard rumors that he's on his way back.
it's not quite the same as Cincinnatus, but let's take it. With Rishi, why is he, explain for the American listeners why he's so controversial.
So with Rishi, his leadership campaign was the exact opposite as Liz Truss's. He was the kind of face that everybody knew. Obviously, he was the Chancellor alongside Boris, so he was probably the most popular or like well-known candidate in the leadership election. But economically, he was the complete opposite to Liz Truss. He didn't want to lower taxes. He wanted to first get a grip on inflation, and that's kind of what led his campaign. So the issue that I have now is with Rishi is, if Liz Truss was brought in knowing that she was going to do kind of crazy, wild, brave things with the economy, how can we go to Rishi that had the total opposite and wanted to kind of do the sensible thing, get a grip on inflation, and then start to grow the economy afterwards?
Mm-hmm. And then with Penny is sort of the case there. If Truss's failure was one of communication, then let's at least have someone who can be a good communicator for the coalition. You know, if even facing sort of the new challenge of you know, having to find that mandate within the next year.
Well, interesting that Penny is a great public speaker, and her job that Liz Truss gave her in cabinet was to be head of the Accession Council, I think. Anyway, during the Queen's death and the Accession Council that saw Charles sworn in as king, she was the one doing all the public speaking for that, and she was absolutely flawless. I mean, there were so many people saying, wow, she did such a great job. Obviously, they were totally unprepared for the Queen's death, and Penny seemed to win over kind of public love by a landslide with the fact that she was so well presented and could communicate so well. But also, I mean, Boris, like, if this is just on public speaking alone, Boris is a great public speaker. And if he does return, I think that nobody will really be able to challenge him. I mean, he has the mandate of the country, and maybe he will be the most secure and powerful PM for it. If he kind of comes in and saves the day after Liz Truss's absolute catastrophic, 30-something days in power, then maybe this could be a big win for him.
So one kind of counterfactual to consider is, if the queen had not died when she did, do you think that Truss would still be in the same position? Or was the fact that she died when she did and basically squelched any kind of agenda push or anything that, that you know, Truss had planned, that was that kind of a critical blow to her ability to survive?
I don't know. I haven't actually thought about that. I think she came into power at a time of political and kind of chaos just in general. The Queen's death absolutely blew the country apart. But do I think that that is part of her downfall? I don't think so. I think the one thing that is her downfall is the fact that her and Kwasi Kwarteng announced this kind of once in a generation budget that blew the markets, for like knocked the socks off the markets. And I think that her failure to communicate what she was going to do with the British public is kind of the sole reason that she has to go, that she had to go. Well, she even said in her speech, "I don't have the mandate to do these things I've done." They had the mandate to do the stuff that they said that they were going to do in 2019. This is not what they said then. So she's right. She doesn't have the backing of the country. So we either need a general election or we need the person that did have the backing of the country.
Yeah. In terms of the mood of the Conservatives you're talking to, is it one of just chaos and despair, or is it one of relief that they don't have to deal with this scenario?
Well, I think yesterday it was just crazy. I mean, they were really seasoned political editors saying, "This is the most catastrophic day of my career." It was literally one thing after another. Like, it just couldn't have got worse. I mean, when you had that MP talking to the BBC saying this was pitiful and there's no coming back from it, that shows the mood of the party. Maybe now there's a bit more kind of calm that she's gone, because everything was being exasperated by the fact that her MPs were dropping like flies in terms of supporting her. I mean, that's just so embarrassing that you've got somebody on TV saying this is pitiful. I'm really angry at my party and there's no coming back from it. That is the game is up at that point. So, yeah, I think maybe today there's a bit more kind of calm just in the last few hours. I mean, obviously people are gearing up already. I just heard Bob Seeley, who's an MP, on the radio saying that he was back in Penny if she was going to run. So I think they're ready to kind of get behind somebody else, the unity candidate that can save the party. What we've just been told by Sir Graham Brady is that front runners will need the backing of 100 MPs. That's quite a lot. And if it could be, it's a total possibility that maybe only one candidate will get that 100 MPs backing them. So it could be chosen in the next few days. It could go to next week, but I don't think it will last the week that it's meant to last. I think that there's only a few people that it could be. I mean, Boris, Rishi, Penny, that's about it. And the first person to get these 100 backers kind of wins.
What a whirlwind situation, but also one that I think speaks to the speed at which modern politics and social media drive opinion now in ways that, you know, previously were never really thought possible. It's pretty amazing to see.
Well, this is what's interesting. So you had all of the broadsheets, the Telegraph, the Mail, kind of saying Liz is the only person that can do this. Within a month, you had there was an editorial in the Telegraph yesterday saying Liz Truss must go. I mean, the sheer shift in opinion and kind of backing has been so quick that I don't think anybody really saw it coming. Even after the complete show that was yesterday, nobody really saw that it would happen today. I mean, there were MPs saying that she would be out by Christmas or she had a few weeks left, but I don't think anybody really thought that it would happen today until Graham Brady was seen going into number 10. That was really the Grim Reaper kind of situation.
What a amazing circumstance, and thank you for filling us all in on it, Kara.
Thank you.
More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this. One of the interesting lessons I think that some people are taking away, including my friend Henry Olson over at the Washington Post and other writers here in America, is that the approach Liz Truss had had more in common with the kind of Reagan-Thatcher growth and supply-side economic proposals of the past. Not enough when it came to reaching out to people in their current climate of struggles with inflation and economic concerns that they have in this current moment. This is probably something that's going to feed into the way that people frame what happens in November in the United States. They're going to be going after, I think, a number of different policies when it comes to the new Republican majorities that we expect, certainly that I expect, within the House and within the Senate. But the truth is that much of the way that our current structure exists in America is going to prevent the kind of policies that these Republicans might want to pursue when it comes to any conservative approaches to taxation or economic growth that are at odds with the Joe Biden White House. It's really going to be dependent on how many senators they have and whether they're able to pull away some of the senators who are up in 2024 or who have their own concerns because of the position that they're in, given the state of the economies in their states, in order to try to make any kind of progress. Even with a significant House majority, as we've seen in the past, really all you can do is behave as if you're still in the minority. You don't have the ability to advance the kind of economic policies that Americans might deem to be, you know, ideal in this moment. That's going to create a challenge for Kevin McCarthy and for the rest of the Republican leadership team. As much as they are disliked by some factions of the conservative movement, they are likely going to be given one of the largest majorities that we've seen Republicans have, perhaps in 90 years. You could certainly rival some of the majorities of the past two decades, but it could be even bigger than that. And that's something that I think is going to present both an opportunity and a challenge for Republicans. The challenge is that they're not going to be able to put in place the kind of economic policies that they'd like. They can do oversight. They can block things that the Biden administration proposes. They can attempt to, you know, throw up all sorts of different blockades against some of the steps that he's taken when it comes to, you know, say, student loan forgiveness and other inflationary steps that he has engaged in. And of course, they can push back against the nominations from the Senate side that the president is going to put forward, and even perhaps take the step of impeaching someone like Alexander Mayorkas, the incredibly unpopular Homeland Security Secretary. But I think that one of the things that people need to understand about this is that this is not a majority that is going to be able to push through the kind of economic policies that people would like to see happen in order to right the ship when it comes to the number one issues that people care about. You know, when it comes to crime, when it comes to, funding the police and the like, that's something that governors are going to determine, you know, not the Senate or the House. When it comes to border issues, there, the Republicans can, provide oversight. And as I said, perhaps go after Mayorkas, exert some pressure on the Biden administration that hasn't existed to this point. But again, thinking that they're going to have a massive ability to change policy is just not the case. That's not the way that the structure of government works. Given all of that, I think that what conservatives are going to have to do is start coming in with the attitude of, we're going to behave as if we're still in the minority, because we are when it comes to power within Washington. We're going to push back in all manner of ways. We're going to block as many things that are proposed. We're going to, you know, slap GAO studies on things that are sent our way and send them back across. And that's something that I think is unfortunate, but it is the way that our government works. People may look at this and say, you know, 2 years after they arrive, similarly to what we saw in 2012 for Republicans, hey, we elected you to exact, you know, dramatic change And you really haven't been able to achieve all that much. And that's why I think the opportunity there is to push the line on what they can achieve. That includes, from my perspective, perhaps shutting down different agencies or using the power of the purse in ways that are more aggressive and that go after these issues, especially given the fact that the president has seen so fit to, you know, toss any kind of norms or any kind of regulatory burden away when it comes to his own priorities. That's something that's going to be a real test for Republicans, and holding a coalition together on that, especially one that's going to include a lot of new people who have not held elected federal office before, is going to be, I think, a very interesting challenge that all of these new faces are going to face in short order. I'm Ben Domenech. You've been listening to another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast. We'll be back soon with more to dive back into the fray.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.